Welcome to the Ex-Good Girl podcast. What is an ex-good girl? Someone who has decided to stop making other people comfortable at her own expense, to stop abandoning what she wants for her life out of fear of what other people will think, and to stop pretending that everything is fine when it's not. If you're a woman who feels exhausted by constant people-pleasing and perfectionism, and you're ready to stop but you just don't know how, you're in the right place. I'm Sarah Bybee-Fisk, the Stop People-Pleasing Coach, and I will teach you what you need to know to get out of that constant cycle of doubt, guilt, and resentment, and into a life that feels powerful and free. Enjoy the episode. You are listening to the Ex-Good Girl podcast, episode 39. I am joined today by Jen Berlingo, and this has been a conversation several months in the making. And Jen, I appreciate you being here so much. I just want to introduce you to my listeners because you have such a rich professional history and just personal history to offer. And Jen is a midlife coach, a licensed professional counselor, and a nationally registered art therapist and master level Reiki practitioner. After two decades of midwifing hundreds of women through life's major transitions and experiencing her own passage through a fiery midlife portal, where she more fully stepped into her queer identity, she was inspired to write Midlife Emergence to accompany other women in traversing their midlife journeys. That's what we're going to talk about today. I'm so excited to have you here with me. And I'm 50, turned 50 a couple months ago. What is up with this midlife thing? And I guess my definition of midlife is anywhere from like 35 to 55, it seems like. What's up with this period of time in our lives, Jen?
Yeah, totally. Hi, thanks for having me. Well, happy belated birthday. And I'm 47. I'll be 48 in the end of this year. And midlife is like psychologically defined as there's a range. It's a period between 40 and 65. And like the rumblings of the midlife crisis, as it is usually termed, but I kind of flip that on its head and call it a midlife emergence, which we can talk about a little bit. Usually you feel the kind of the quaking of that in the early 40s, around 41, 42. There's actually like an astrological link to that as well. I work with women all throughout this period, anywhere from late 30s, like you said, to even early mid 60s. And yeah, the stereotypical midlife crisis, I feel like we hear so much about the male experience, the red sports car, that whole thing. And in researching for my book, Midlife Emergence, I really found that even some of the texts that talk about midlife for women talk about it more around like what the challenges are, which are true and real, but without a lot of offering of what the opportunities are at this point in our life to pivot and to really step into our power. So I feel like it doesn't have to be this crisis or an emergency, which is why I call it emergence. That word is defined as the process of coming into view or becoming exposed after being previously concealed. And for me, my personal experience of it felt very much like that. Just noticing this like marked difference when I entered my 40s, which is like the decade that's the liminal space or like a waiting room between the first and second act of life. And we have an opportunity in this time to really architect our lives, you know, the way we want it to be for the second act. And that's really what I work with people on and what I experienced in my own story.
I love that you call it quaking.
Yeah.
That feels like so real for me. How do you define that quaking or how do you see it show up?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I feel like throughout my book, there is somewhat of a volcanic metaphor happening. And the quaking is how I guess it began for me. It began to feel like that for me. And it also, I hear it from my clients described as such too. It's like this internal feeling or inkling or urge of like, is this all there is? I want something more. How do I get it? And it's this quiet inner voice that sometimes it's really hard to speak it out loud, or write it, which is what I help people do. to admit to yourself that there might be something underneath that is like longing to be unearthed in midlife. So I call it a quaking because it sometimes feels like the internal rumbling. It hasn't yet erupted. It's like, you know, magma under the surface. It's not yet lava. It's not yet forming new ground, which eventually it can. But yeah, there's this fiery sort of potential energy to it.
I so identify with that. And why do you think that it is so hard to admit that that is happening in our lives as midlife women?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that it is really challenging at this time of life when we're, well, like me, I guess most of my clients are recovering good girls, you know, the ex good girl podcast is like perfect people to talk to about this. And, you know, they've done all the right things, you know, met the expectations to create this life that they should want, but are still feeling that dissatisfaction somewhere underneath. But making changes at this time of life can definitely feel really disruptive because the stakes are super high when you're settled into, you know, careers, mortgages, relationships, parenting, taking care of aging parents, perhaps, all of those responsibilities and roles and hats we have in by midlife. It feels like once you, you know, the quaking kind of unearths, and if you do start to make transitions or changes in your life, the ripple effects actually ripple out to all of your different concentric circles of people that you love, and can disrupt that life that, you know, we've worked really hard to curate. So I feel like at that time, a lot of us don't really have roadmaps or models or cheerleaders that are helping us to really unfurl these parts of ourselves. And it's really tempting then to stay in this like sleep stagnant homeostasis or habitual way of living and doing the day-to-day life. Because that voice inside might disrupt that. So I feel like that is a pretty common tension that comes up in the people that I work with, and definitely is one that I completely related to in my own passage.
100%. I'm just kind of going back in my own memory to, like, for me, it was leaving the religious tradition in which I was raised. And it is not an exaggeration to say there were some days I felt like the literal ground underneath my feet was moving, and I didn't know what was what was true, what was reliable, what was what I wanted, what was what I had been programmed to want. And I think a common thing that I did was I began to like play out scenarios in my mind. Well, if I do this, then this and this and this and this will happen. But if I do this, right, then this and this and this and this will happen. And it seemed like there just wasn't a way where everybody could get everything they wanted, where my parents would be happy, my children would be okay, my husband wouldn't, you know, have, you know, different issues. And it took a long time for me to finally settle and just ask, but what do you want, Sarah? Right. What do you want? Why do you think that is such a hard question for us to ask ourselves?
Yeah, it is a hard question. And when I work with people and ask, like, what do you want? That's the question they're like, what? Like, how do I even know? And I think that's because we are really socialized to be wanted, not to want, to be desired, yes, not to desire. You know, that whole thing, you know, being, if you're socialized as a woman in our culture and being in Gen X, like I am, and you are, right? I think I got the cutoff right there. Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely feels like the wanting and to take something for ourselves is not something we have been told was okay. It's like all about almost this martyrdom attitude of like, oh, you know, like it's really, in my family, a virtue to, oh, she does everything for everyone else before herself. Like that's sort of the way that I was raised, that, you know, women are to be constantly giving and providing and not doing actual self-care or even asking ourselves those things. And yeah, I so relate to what you just said about like, how do I get what I want and have everyone be happy? It's like that whole feeling of wanting to not disappoint others and to make sure we're liked, you know, the people pleasing thing. And I feel like for me, and a lot of the crux of like my book has to do with how much more important that it is to not disappoint yourself. Like even if you're disappointing someone else, it's best to never override or ignore yourself, because in the long run, living in integrity and authenticity and truth is actually going to be more growth producing and kind and honest to everyone involved. And for me, that really hit home when I thought about raising my kid, who's now 16, you know, and like, what type of life would I like for them? And what do I want to have them see me doing and choosing? And if it's really just squashing my own desire and not living in my truth, that's not what I would, you know, want for their life or give them advice on if they were older. I'm using they, them pronouns because they're non-binary. But yeah, beautiful. So that really feels, that feels like such the kernel in this time of life and in this like type of work to really get at how to do that and how to get over some of that habitual, you know, people pleasing, good girl stuff that keeps us trapped sometimes.
It's so interesting because you mentioned like wanting to do it for your child. And for those of us who are moms, a lot of times that is where we do have to kind of muster the courage. And I've said before, you know, it was when my daughter came out that we really decided that our religious tradition wasn't working, but it was kind of motivated by her. Tell me when the quaking started for you. I've read your book. I will link to it because I think it's amazing, but I want the people who listen to hear how it started for you.
Sure. Yeah. I write about this in the opening of my book, but I had this inkling around my 41st birthday of the craving, like more truth and grit and rawness and depth and passion. And I felt like my life was like humming along. It was quiet. It was, perfect on paper, married to an amazing man who is still my best friend, but is my ex-husband now. You know, we had this great kid. I had my private psychotherapy practice running. I was living in the Bay Area at the time. I now live in Boulder, Colorado. And I had just great family, friends around me, but there was this dissatisfaction that I felt ashamed to even have. Like I have all this beautiful, wonderful life, but I still have this guilt and shame for having this. I couldn't even put my finger on what. And I hadn't admitted to myself yet what was kind of brewing under there. And this one day, I remember I dropped my kid off at a summer camp and I was still in my pajamas because that's how I do drop off. I don't get out of the car and, you know, still in PJs. I actually didn't even have shoes on that day, which is not characteristic of me. But after I dropped them off, I had this urge to drive to the ocean. It was like a 20-minute hop over to a little town called Half Moon Bay from where I was living. And I was listening to a Spotify playlist and I kind of had it on shuffle and I was thinking of it as like an oracle of like whatever songs come, that's what I need to hear. And this Ani DiFranco song came on, who I'd been listening to since, forever, since my college days. And the song's called So What? And I have the lyrics in the first chapter of my book, but you can look it up and listen. I totally recommend it. But it really hit me differently that day. And I was able to admit to myself this truth that had been beneath the surface for a long time and on the surface, which I'll explain. But I knew that day that it would shake that foundation that I'd built for my life. And the truth inside of me at that time was really that I wanted to be in an intimate relationship with a woman at some point in my life. And I'd always known I was queer. It was literally one of the first conversations I had with Craig, who is the man who eventually became my husband. And, you know, at the time, I guess we were 23 when we met, and it was, I was like, oh, maybe I'm bi. We were friends and that was just how it was. But then we started dating and it didn't become like an issue really until around 41. And I started to feel like, oh gosh, am I not going to get to experience that part of myself, which is a very real part, and identifying as queer? And now I realize I'm not bi, but at the time, the compulsory heterosexuality and all the boxes that were available to me felt, I kind of put myself into that one, but I identify as a lesbian now. I think that just knowing that I have this one life, to do and to remember, it created this sense of urgency in me. And like, am I not going to experience this part of myself more than just sexuality, but like around just how I show up in the world? So Yeah, I was thinking of that bell hooks quote about like queerness being at odds with everything. It was very much a part of me and very invisible, so much so that that felt toxic to me, even physically sometimes. But just be straight passing felt like self-abandonment in some way, or like that was it. Yeah. And that still is the queer femme invisibility thing is very real. But anyway, so I felt I was like driving to the ocean and this all like came up in me and it was like, okay, I have to just say something or do something about this. So I knew that evening I'd have to talk with him about like, oh gosh, this is so loud. And the quaking is like, it needs to actually be expressed, like literally pressed out to a safe person. So I talked with him and he understood and was like, yeah, we've known this is there and, you know, here it is. And so we'll work through it together. And we did. And it was over the course of most of my 40s of us like figuring out how to work through that, which is really a lot of the memoir part of my book, talking about like working with open relationship and open marriage and deciding whether or not that would work for us, which we tried and realized neither of us had the constitution for that, nor the attachment style to sustain that, even though I know it's a very valid and awesome, you know, relationship style for a lot of people. Yeah, we eventually got separated and divorced. And yesterday, my girlfriend and I celebrated our 4-year anniversary. So yeah, a lot of things have shifted, which, you know, the memoir half of my book goes through that whole story. The other half of my book is more of a personal growth book where at the end of each chapter, I invite the reader into, you know, journaling, art making, personal ritual and ceremony type exercises to like chew on their own feelings around each of the topics I present around what might come up in midlife. So yeah, it's a long answer to your question.
That's a great answer. And I wrote down so many things that I want to make sure that we revisit. And so I'm going to take us back for just a second. You were talking about, you know, your life looking good on paper and being grateful for what you have. And I'm just interested if you find the same thing. I find that women are over-programmed for gratitude. Like it's one of the emotions that we are told to default to instead of problem solving, instead of taking a look at, well, why am I feeling dissatisfaction? Well, I should be grateful. I should be grateful for this and this and this. And you said something, and I can't remember if it was in a conversation that we had or if it was in your book at this time, but you said there are no cheerleaders for women who are moving out of gratitude into changing, because everybody just wants to put us back in gratitude. You should be grateful. You have healthy children. You have a happy marriage. You have all of the hallmarks of what we have been programmed that we should want.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I completely resonate with everything you're saying right now, for myself, for clients, for friends, like that whole feeling of, you should just be grateful. Look what all you've been given. Like, why isn't that enough? And be happy. And I think about, it's actually the epigraph that starts my book, the quote of like, her name is Lizzie Rusinko. And I'm looking over here because the quote is by my desk. The story you're ashamed to tell is the one that will set you free. And I feel like that shame, like it dies when you actually speak it out loud in safe places, like with another person who's safe, or with a coach or with a friend. Or it feels like we sometimes don't even allow ourselves to do that because of that programming that says that we really have everything that we should want. And some of the projections, I think, and expectations that I fielded when I was going through this transition had to do with that. Well, why, like, is sex really that important? Is sexuality really that important? You have all of this, like, why would you disrupt the thing that so many people are trying to attain? And I knew it was about more than sex for me. And even if it was just about sex for me, that's also enough. You know, it's like, it's such a different way of thinking than how I grew up, you know, which really was about gratitude. I think about like my grandmother saying like, oh, well, you're just happy to have a job. If I'd say like, I was unhappy in an old job, you know, well, you'd just be grateful you have one. And it's like, okay, that type of thinking, which I get is depression era for in her, you know, respect around job, but it permeates into all of the different areas that we're, you know, in which we're raised, like to think about this thing. So yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
Well, and so many ideas are coming to my head at once, but it's really just this either or thinking. Either I have to be grateful for what I have and maintain it, or I'm an ungrateful, you know, fill in the blank. And I think we're just not taught ways to hold both. Like I can be grateful and I can want more. Right. I can be grateful with this part of my life and dissatisfied with this part of my life. Totally. Mm-hmm. And so holding and instead of either or is, we're not taught it. And it becomes a little scary.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so much about this binary thinking that you're pointing to of the, like really not embracing the both and in so many aspects. It's either good or it's bad. It's like, maybe it's just true. Like I'm really not about good and bad or like, are you happy? Are you sad? Like I have a whole chapter in my book called Feeling It All, where it's like, sometimes, especially in transition, I'm feeling grief and I'm feeling total elation in the same moment. It's like, really everything is that both and, luckily, I think, you know, culturally, we're moving hopefully out of like the binary thinking that is the fault that's at the root of what you're talking about. I mean, even in gender is also what I'm thinking of as I say that, sitting here as a mom of a non-binary child. So I think that hopefully we're becoming more flexible in that. But I feel like our generation and those of us in midlife are somewhat pioneers in that thinking and being the in-between generation, you know, with children who might actually be teaching us more about that and parents who are pushing against that. And we're caught in that middle place around this cultural shift that's happening. So,
I think gender is a really great example of where we're seeing that it is not, that there's a whole spectrum, that there's a, you know, that, I don't even know that we understand the magnificence and magnitude of that spectrum, but I think something beautiful happens for us when we see that there's a part of us that is not expressed. And I love how you said it. You say it this way in the book too, like, am I never going to get to experience this part of me that I know is there? Even if I can only feel it as a shadow or a whisper, for me, that was really around, it wasn't around gender or sexuality, but it was around, like, I've been a stay-at-home mom of five kids.
Wow.
Right? Like it's my own little three-ring circus, but I want to think, I want to grow, I want to build, I want to create. And so when I stepped into becoming a coach and a business owner, that was where I was like, am I never going to get to earn money? Am I never going to get to create something that is just mine? Am I never going to get to have my own office? Right.
Right.
and then it was around that time that I was reminded of, you know, Virginia Woolf's A Room of One's Own, and how like a room of my own that is just my space, that is just for me to create and be in. And so I just think about people listening, and I would just love for them to ask, like, what is the part of you that you see either, you know, fully formed or maybe is like a ghost or shadow right now, where that question just really hits you? Am I never going to get to experience this part of me? Because whatever that is, whether it's around gender and sexuality, whether it's around creation and growth of a project or whatever it is, that is just, there's so much there.
There's so much. It's so juicy. And I want to say, like, I definitely work with, like, what you just said hits home so much for me as well. Like, my own midlife transition was not just about sexuality. And I find that that's true with my clients as well, where, you know, there will be an area, but really it permeates all of them. I also made a career transition and a move to a different state. Like, all of that happened in this decade. And parenting shifts and divorce, like so many things. And my book is really about the book, and my work is really about the general, you know, the idea of what is that thing? What the thing that you're asking, you know, what is it in you? And it's unique to each person that really is being called forth in this time of life. And it feels the thing that I was alluding to earlier with the astrological link to like midlife crisis / emergence at like early 40s is called the Uranus opposition. And it's about the planet Uranus being opposite where it was when you were born. And not to get like super into that, I'm not an astrologer, but the planet Uranus is about like rebellion and freedom. And so the way that my astrologer told it to me on my birthday reading around that time was like, anything that you've repressed and anything that feels like it hasn't seen the light of day, Uranus will blow up if you don't acknowledge it. And so it was like this challenge of like, okay, if it's under there, it's going to explode unless you let it out in, you know, healthy way. So I don't know. I was thinking about that as you were talking about like, am I never going to get to, and that sense of urgency, and then like knowing these parts of yourself and how important it is to have them expressed and visible, you know, out in the world, and to live them and model them for others, like you as a business owner, and just feeling that empowered state of yourself in a different way. Like, this is a part of me that I need to step into and I need to grow into, which, yeah, is such profound work to watch people do and to, yeah, to be going through constantly in myself. I don't think it's over ever, really, because we're all evolving and growing. But yeah, it's true what you're speaking to there for sure.
And so much of it, I find, is the transition from who was I taught to be, the roles. Like for me, it was all about, you know, religious programming about what my time and my body and my energy and my resources were supposed to be used for, having as many children as I could, staying home with them, creating a nurturing, loving, which I enjoyed and I loved and I found a lot of meaning in that. And then what was I choosing for me of my own free will and choice? That's for me kind of where it happened. And luckily, I had a very, you know, supportive husband and very supportive children. But I find that so many women get to this point where they're like, I know there's an inkling there, but I can't. Right. I can't. It's not okay. And they then go into like ignoring, repressing, distracting from that feeling.
Right.
And it shows up in shopping and scrolling and depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
Because now we know something is there and we're trying to actively not see it.
Totally. Yeah. It comes out sideways, or it comes out in these ways that, you know, like you said, like the numbing. I think I have something like that in my, on my website about like, do you pull into the garage and just sit in your car, like not wanting to go in? Are you just scrolling and not like, you know, it's like drowning it in the glass of wine after dinner, whatever that might be, like whatever vices or just habits that we do to quiet that knowing inside of ourselves. It's like definitely a deep knowing, and it's an empowered knowing, and it's, putting that back to sleep as much as possible. It will eventually see the light of day and come out in some way or another. So it feels important really to turn toward it and listen to it and try to understand like what is wanting to be expressed here, what's wanting to happen. And I do this visualization exercise with people I work with, and I include the audio for it in my book, in the audiobook version and in the paperback version. There's a link to it, but where it's a future self visualization, where you're looking at yourself 20 years into the future. And the way that I like to use it is kind of this empowered version of yourself that you're growing into. And then after that is like concretized, like I have people dress as her, make art about it, like write about the conversation you had with her in the visualization, and then really using that as like the muse of the person you're growing into. So you can make day-to-day decisions. Like, even for me, it's like, where do I want to have dinner, you know, or what do I want to wear today? Would she wear that? Would she like the person I'm wanting to become? Which feels like a different way of making those choices than the habitual ways we were taught. Like, what should I do? It's more like this person I'm wanting to be, like I'm becoming her every day. And how do I step more and more into that, that stance? And I feel like, I don't know, that's actually, as I'm saying that, reminding me, I have a quote in my book by Bethany Webster that says for daughters growing up in a patriarchal culture, there's a sense of having to choose between being empowered and being loved. And I feel like a lot of women growing up in our generation and probably before, we don't have to choose that anymore. We don't have to choose between those two as a survival strategy. As childhood, that is a survival strategy because we're literally trying not to rock the boat, you know, of the those who are feeding us and sheltering us. But now it's like we can be empowered and loved. And no, maybe not everyone's going to be comfortable with the changes that we make or the ways that we step into our power, you know, but like I said, I think it does us a disservice to not do that for those around us as well, because they can, you know, not only learn from that, but relate to us as we truly are rather than who they thought we were or who they decided we were years ago and are still relating to an older version of us. So, yeah.
That's so good. I have found, and I want to get to like the question I'm going to ask you is, okay, so what's on the other side of this transition? Yeah. But I'm going to ask that in a second because my brain thinks in really concrete terms. And so as I was going through your book and then just kind of listening to you now, I kind of made a list. Like if you were going to tell someone, this is what you do first, this is what you do second. Okay. So I'm going to run my list by you of what I think you did. And then I want you to like fill it in or change it or rearrange it. And the first thing that I noticed is that you made a place for this conversation with yourself. Like, what is this? What am I feeling? Is this part of me something that wants to be expressed? And so that was number one. You like created a space and invited in this curiosity about yourself.
Right. Yeah. I think that can be a long process for some people. And it has been a lifelong process for me, this internal listening and turning the ear inward. And during midlife, it was funny. I had this like desire to really only listen internally because I felt like all the external inputs were throwing me off because of the social, familial, cultural conditioning that I had been so programmed into. I was like, oh, I even stopped. Like I used to pull, I mean, I do it again now, but for a time I didn't pull tarot cards or oracle cards or do any external input stuff because I was like, no, I just need to hear my own voice. Like it was, I had to shut everything out and really just hone in on like what was actually true for me. And I think that that's something that I was practiced in by that point, but it was still hard. And some people who come to me really are like, wait, what do you even mean? I'm like, let's really turn inward. Cause a lot of us aren't brought up to even know what that is. That's definitely a first step for sure.
Yeah. And in fact, we're brought up in the opposite. I mean, we tell our kids all the time, that didn't hurt. You're okay.
Right. Oh, you're okay.
Yeah. You're not hungry. You just ate.
Right.
Or I don't care if you don't like him. He's your uncle. You go give him a hug and a kiss.
You just said the example I was about to use. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And this happens often at the hands of people who love us. And so it's confusing for little brains who are looking, like you said, to be loved. And they trade being empowered by their own, like, I don't like that guy. He gives me the creeps. I don't like the way he rubs my shoulder. They trade believing themselves for believing these outside voices. And so I love that step number one is to just like get rid of the outside voices and invite it in and listen to you.
Right. Yeah.
And then it seemed like step number two was you had to tell yourself the truth.
Yes. For sure. Had to tell myself. And that took a while. Like I said, that, you know, trip to the beach was the beginning of like, oh, I've known this about myself, but something actually needs to shift now. And I don't know what it is. And it's freaking terrifying because I did really love my life. And I do love my family, you know, all of the struggle with that. But I needed to be living in accordance with my own integrity. And they needed to be relating to me as I'm in integrity. So,
yeah. Yeah. And for me, the truth was, I just want more than this.
Right.
I don't know exactly what it is, but I want more. I want to have something of just my own.
Mm-hmm. Which saying I want more is like maybe the most radical saying that a woman can claim. I mean, it's like, oh, the audacity, right?
Yeah. But
it's like a human thing. Like it's not, it just culturally isn't supported.
At all. And then right. if I were to name step number three, you had to start having the hard conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Actually, the way you just phrased that made me think of a quote that I put in the book, or that I said, that it's like about the freedom that we're craving is on the other side of the conversations we're avoiding. It's like I had to really have the conversations with starting with my husband, but then also bringing in a supportive network of people who I could actually rely on. The telling him, and then the telling like the select friends, and telling my therapist, and having, you know, people around me who could help me in this transition. So it wasn't just me circling inside my own head. And my family of origin wasn't included in that first ring of telling for my own story. For some people it is, but for me, that was like final frontier land. I knew I had to get, I couldn't feel their fears. I didn't want to invite those in for fear of it like shifting me, out of like what I felt like needed to change. I knew that those were the voices that were the interjects or the internal messages that I was already playing in my head. So it was like, okay, that's the final frontier for me.
Well, and it lands so much with me that the people who we are attached to from the very beginning are the ones whose love we most crave. We're often most afraid to disappoint. And so there's such wisdom in building and these next couple steps kind of all bleed together, and you kind of touch on them, but like building tools and skills that reinforce your ability to listen to yourself, building a supportive community, finding a coach or a therapist or someone to help you hold the space for this emerging, new person.
Right.
Before often you go to, sometimes it's parents, sometimes it's other family members or friends, so that you are resilient to whatever it is. It makes a lot of sense for them to think.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
It was really a beautiful moment for me when I could say to my parents, like, I understand your worry. I get that you think I am making a terrible, terrible mistake here. That makes a lot of sense to me. And I would love to have your respect and your trust. Mm-hmm. But if I don't have it, it's okay, because I have my own.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. You're able to say that and do that way.
And it takes some time to build that.
It really does. Yeah. Yeah.
And so the community and the friends, I just love that you mentioned that. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I think that what you just said about, like, in a way, it's like protecting the energy of this new emerging person. It's the reparenting of the self, and maybe turning some of those early messages on their head and rewriting them for yourself. You know, if it was like, be a good girl, it's like, be a truth teller, or, whatever your flip of that would be, and starting to really ground those and find ways of just anchoring them in and tattooing them in. It's like, no, this is actually me standing in my truth here, and having that feel strong enough to go, back into some of those environments where the older messages were planted in a way, like you said, that is compassionate and understanding. And it's like, of course you love me and you've been trying to protect me, and this, your belief system is this and mine is this, and we can have a conversation. And one of the ways that I guess this is later on in my steps, but since we're talking about bringing people in and talking with people, the way that I told my mom, and when I told my mom about the fact that Craig and I were separating, and about, my sexuality, I wrote a letter to her. And I did that intentionally because, well, I'd been doing it since I was a little kid, like leaving notes that were really important under her pillow and saying, write me back, don't talk to me. And it's so funny, my kid does that now without even knowing that I did that. But I wanted to give her the space to process on her own and outside of my earshot too. So it's like, here's my truth, take it and chew on it, process it, come back to me when, it feels like it's time to talk. And then we will, just to give her the space to digest change, because it's definitely going to ripple out and impact people. Any changes that we make, you know, people that love us and that are used to us being a certain way in the world.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful idea. And then lastly, you created a concrete vision of what you wanted after the transition. And I think you spoke to that one, like this future self exercise. And so tell me what awaits after the emergence. Like, what have you experienced? What have your, you know, clients and people you work with experienced? What is on the other side?
Wow. So I feel like I'm still continuing to emerge. I think we all are, right? So I know that's like the annoying answer because it's like, well, it's not over. But I will say, like, I wrote this book from during the process. Like, I wrote it from what people say call the messy middle, which I feel like is so overused. I try not to say it, but it is, it's pretty raw and vulnerable. And it's like, as I'm writing, it's happening. It wasn't just like packaged tied in a bow, like, here's how I got to where I am. Ta-da. Doesn't feel like that in real life anyway. So why paint that picture? I'm just trying to like actually tell the truth of the mess of it and normalize the mess of transition for everyone, because I don't feel like we talk about it enough. So I'll start by saying that. I'll also say that the steps aren't linear. Like, everyone I work with does things so differently, and I want that to be flexible. And my book isn't, you know, 13 steps to getting through midlife, even though there are 13 chapters and 13 themes that are common. It's not, you know, and then number six, you'll do this. I wish I could write that. That'd be so much more helpful, probably, honestly. But the other side, I guess what I will say, because I feel like undergone the fierier part of the transition or gone through that portal where it did feel like I just wanted to run down the street with my hair on fire. And it was a little bit like a second adolescence and a little bit disruptive. And I had that energy in me that was like the blowing it up sort of energy, even if I did do it kind of slowly. And we had the support of, you know, the therapists and the friends and the couples therapists. And in my head, that still felt like blowing up because I was such a good girl. But I feel like now it's more of a slow burn. Like, I hope to never not feel the burn, because for me, I guess that's how I experience it. It's like the pull toward evolution and what's growth producing, and to really acknowledge my yearnings and to go for them. Yeah. So I still have that on the other side. But I think the way I would answer that, well, I guess one word that just came to my head was freedom. There's this empowered freedom in knowing that I went through one of the hardest transitions of my life and I'm still here, and I am a more free version of myself, and I do get to experience myself in these other capacities that really were underneath the surface. I wanted to say closeted, but they weren't. That word has a lot of other things to it. So yes, freedom. But I'll also say that, like, there's a psychological underpinning to this with Eric Erickson. He was a psychologist in the 50s, and he gave like a challenge to each period of life. And he said that the midlife period is the challenge of stagnation versus generativity. So we reevaluate our purpose and we make sure we're going to be leaving the type of impact on the world or the legacy that we want to leave. And so it's like the stagnation can feel safe, secure, familiar. And obviously our nervous systems love that feeling because it's really nice to just rest in that. And then there's the generativity, which for me felt like this seduction of the mystery and a yearning for the more that we're talking about, the desire to take more risks. And I think in the beginning, before I went through this part of this transition, the pull toward like growth and generativity was so strong for me that I felt like allergic to stagnation, allergic to safe. But for a lot of others, it's, the steadiness of the stagnation feels good, or there's somewhere in between. I'd say on the other side of it, for me, I am more loving the freedom feeling that I was describing, the slow burn feeling I'm describing, and I am starting to crave safety again in a different way, in a totally different, it's like spiraling around to a different way of finding the safety, security, stability. And this isn't in my book, it's kind of beyond my book, but I'm noticing that in myself, that kind of, I guess it's an ebb and flow, but this shift to like, okay, what actually then is safe? I know that the things I thought were permanent are not, you know, there's no promise. I really thought I'd be married forever to that one person. Like, so I know that change is the one thing that we can depend on as what will be happening, but how to find comfort in the uncertainty of that and to really train my nervous system to still be, to go into the parasympathetic or the rest without it being a collapse or a numbing, mm-hmm. but more like an empowered rest. So that's where I am today with my own inner workings of this, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I love that you call it ebb and flow. And I love that you say, you know, the steps aren't linear. I think we really want like the before and after picture.
Right. We're just so
programmed. And that's part of the fear is we don't know what the after would look like. But I so appreciated two things you said. I'm still here and I am a more free version of myself. And I have found that to be true of myself. I have a deep connection. Mm-hmm. I have a knowing of who I am outside of the roles I perform for other people. I have a trust of my intuition and my wisdom. I can tolerate, you know, uncomfortable emotions. I've stopped calling them negative emotions because they're not negative. They don't feel great, but it's a clue that growth is happening and that there's something there to learn. And I so appreciate you being another voice for this process and the way that we can trust ourselves. And I think that everyone wants to be a more free version of themselves, whatever that looks like.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I love your list too, of what you've found on the other side. That was really beautifully articulated.
Well, thank you so much for being here. If people want to find out more about how to work with you, where to buy your book, where can we send them?
Sure. My website is kind of the hub for everything. And it's just my name, jenberlingo.com, which is JenBerlingo.com. And there, my book is available anywhere people buy books, online in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. Or you can support your independent bookseller and request that they order it because it's available that way too if they don't already have it. And I do one-to-one coaching with women and non-binary folks in midlife. And also I have a group that's forming for early 2024 right now. I have some amazing people in it and it's still open. There's still spots available by application as well. So all of that is on jenberlingo.com. And I've just started Substack actually because I'm feeling that pull to write again. So I'm on Substack now too, doing a weekly newsletter with like more current writings and musings on these topics. Beautiful. Which you can also link to from my site. Yeah.
Beautiful. Thanks. Well, I actually have subscribed to your Substack and I'm really enjoying reading it. So
thank you.
I appreciate that. And Jen, thanks so much for having this conversation with me.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sarah. It's been great talking with you.
Hey, thanks for listening. If this podcast has been helpful to you, I would really appreciate it if you would give me a 5-star rating in whatever platform you listen to your podcast. And if you go to my website, sarahfisk.coach, you can sign up there to receive my emails. Right now, I'm taking private one-to-one clients who want my help speeding up this work in their own lives. I really hope to provide a lot of free information on my website and in my podcast for people to do this work on their own. But if you're interested in having a coach like me to help you implement these things faster, to find the blind spots and obstacles that you're not aware of, go to my website and sign up for a consult. That's a time when you and I can get on Zoom and talk about the particulars of your situation, and I can show you how I could be helpful. The second thing you can do on my website is sign up for a freebie that I have called Difficult Conversations. Having a conversation that seems like it's going to be hard or difficult is one of the things that people pleasers struggle with. And so I've created a whole guide for you to be able to do that with some more confidence. That will also get you signed up for information about my group program, Stop People Pleasing, which is coming again at the end of April, beginning of May. And it's a group coaching program where you join a community of women just like you who are struggling to overcome perfectionating and people pleasing. And we do it together in a group. It's a really amazing opportunity to not just learn from your own experience, but just to see how similar you are to so many other women out there. The healing and the challenging and the laughing and the growth that happens in that beautiful community of women is really amazing. And if it's interesting to you, I would love for you to know about it. Thanks again for listening.